654 Roar is the number. We were talking a little LSU football before the break. Are you an FPI guy? Like, do you care at all about that?
No. No, but it's good radio. It's always good radio. What is your FBI related?
I'm not an FBI guy either.
It's slanted towards the SEC.
I like SP Plus a lot better than FPI. I also don't think like the one number catch all stats in context late in sports are never going to be an accurate barometer for how good a team is.
Is SP Plus Connolly's metric?
That's the best one.
That's a more nuanced metric than
if
FPI
you're getting
is.
A one number catch all, go with SP Plus. ESPN, their analytics department is just kind of like way behind where a lot of where things are trending in the sports world. FPI has LSU at like 8.5 wins. It's just kind of why I asked. And I think they give them a 75% chance to beat Clemson and a 39% chance to make the college football playoff is where the FPI is at. People don't realize LSU has a really hard schedule.
Well, we joke. They are in the SEC.
Yeah.
So, I mean, like, you're going to, and you're opening with Clemson, which is not a gimme game.
No, it's not a gimme.
Even in a down year. So,
here's kind of how this walks out for LSU. And I know the Clemson game's getting a lot of light locally, Sam, as it should. People are forgetting week 3 is at Ole Miss. That might be the most anticipated college football game of the season.
Oh yeah, that's the one I'm more excited for that game than just about any other game on the schedule for any team this year. Just flat out hate. We talked about hate in the first segment. Talked about ejections. There will be some hate in that game.
LSU has to go Clemson, La Tech, which is a gimme, at Ole Miss. They're back at the crib against Texas A&M, which, regardless of your opinions on Marcel Reed and Texas A&M, they were 11-0 at one point last year.
And it's coming off of whatever that Ole Miss game is going to be.
Yes.
So you feel like they're going to look ahead.
They've got.
They're going to look over that Texas A&M game because Ole Miss is standing right there.
Then they've got McNeese. They're at Kentucky, which I don't think is a gimme for what it's worth for anyone. I'm not giving that game away after Will Stein, Kenny Menchie. That's giving me enough respect to where I think Kentucky will be competitive at minimum, and I think their defense is going to be pretty good. So I'm not giving that as a freebie. Mississippi State at home is probably a win. At Auburn at Jordan Hur, what do we know about that team besides Byron Brown and Alex Galesh? I think that's yet to be seen, but I'm never giving you a win under the lights of Jordan Hur, so that'll be interesting. And then off week before Bama, Texas, at Tennessee, and at Arkansas.
It's a brutal end.
That's not an easy schedule.
It's a brutal schedule. When I look at the Ole Miss game, I feel like it's completely impossible to try and project what that's going to feel like for both teams. Those two teams despise each other now, more so than ever. Emotionally, you have to think, Faxon, both of them are going to be looking ahead to it the week before and completely focused on it to the point that the week after may suffer a little bit because of that. Ole Miss follows that LSU game with Florida, which is a lot easier game than Texas A&M, but it's not a freebie either. I wouldn't be stunned if both teams lost that week the week after that. Just from the perspective of we've seen so many times a team goes out there and they win that big one. They win the one that they're emotionally charged for, and then the letdown spot happens. Or the week before, they trap themselves, and they look ahead, and they're overlooking an opponent, and they trap themselves. That's not going to happen to either of these teams. They play Charlotte and La Tech. But the week after that, even if LSU's the favorite against Texas A&M, you're right. Texas A&M had a nasty defense last year, went 11-0 to start the year, and their quarterback figures to be a little bit better, even if I'm extremely down on him. For Ole Miss, you're following that LSU game with Florida, who are going to be a lot better this year than they were last year.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard for them not to be. They're significantly more talented, and they have a much better coach.
Last year, they had a top 15 talent-wise roster in America.
And
I'll maintain that. That defense was nasty.
It was bad coaching. Horrible coaching. Horrible coaching, inconsistent quarterback play, got you killed. LSU's schedule makes it so hard for me to nail down my predicted outcome with them, with all the new players, and Sam Levitt having one great year, one not great year, and a few emotionally charged games in there. They are one of the most unpredictable teams in the country to me this year, even though they are immensely talented. There's probably not five teams in the country more talented than LSU. But everybody's new. The coaching staff is new, even though they've been together before, and you don't know exactly what your quarterback is. Fascinating football team. Outside of Clemson, outside of the Clemson-related stuff week one, fascinating football team for me this year, Faxon.
There's just no known elements, and when I go through schedules, which I think is a lot of what this point of the calendar is about right now, I'm looking for freebies. I look at LSU's schedule, I don't feel comfortable giving more than like four or five. As I'm giving La Tech, I'm giving McNeese, I'm giving Mississippi State at home, and I'm giving at Arkansas.
I would give them at Kentucky, too. I know you're higher on Kentucky. I think they're going to win at Kentucky.
You're trusting Lane Kiffin to go into Kentucky and win with expectations? That's a dangerous game, brother. You couldn't even do that against Mark Stoops.
I'm going to bite. I'll do it.
All right, we'll give him five.
I will bite and give him five because I think the roster is more talented than they had at Ole Miss.
It is. We'll give him five. All right, so we're at five with Kentucky, and that is seven games, Clemson at home, at Ole Miss, Texas A&M at home, at Auburn, Alabama at home, Texas at home, and at Tennessee is the seven games that I'm not comfortable with just bookmarking as a guaranteed win.
No, I mean, the 8.5 makes sense. The 8.5 makes a lot of sense just from the perspective of you're in the SEC and everything's new. You know who Sam Levitt reminds me a lot of? Reminds me a lot of Bo Nix. He reminds me a lot of college Bo Nix, where there is obviously a ton of talent there. Like a ton of natural talent. So much more escapability even than Auburn College Bo Nix. But any given play, Facts, he could make the worst throw you've ever seen or break 17 tackles and throw the ball 20 yards over the middle of the field and throw an 80-yard touchdown.
You love Bo Nix.
I loved Bo Nix in college. And somehow Bo Nix has proven me right. I thought there was no way that guy was going to turn into anything, and he has.
You can shout out Sean Payton.
Shout out to Sean Payton, and shout out to Will Stein. Yeah. When you look at Sam Levitt, I see a lot of Bo Nix in him, and I don't know if that's a good or a bad thing for year three Lane Kiffin Sam Levitt.
Let me ask you about Lane specifically. 6'5", 4" roar if you want to get in on SEC football, Lane Kiffin and LSU. I've got Lane's data in front of me. In big games as an SEC head coach, we're going to include 2009 Tennessee, and we're going to include his tenure at Ole Miss because that is the time that he's been in the SEC. Versus AP ranked, you know what? Let's start with overall and give the credit because it's deserved. Overall, as an SEC head coach, Lane Kiffin is 62-25. It's a good record, 71.3% win percentage. In SEC games, he is 37-20, about 65% of games. Again, objectively good record. Versus AP ranked opponents, he is 12-13, 48%. That's not bad. You want about half your games versus ranked opponents, that you can live with that.
Take it. Yeah.
You take it.
In the SEC especially, you absolutely take that.
Here's where things start to get a little bit murky. AP top 10 opponents, 4-10. That is a 28.6% win percentage. Versus AP top 5 opponents, he is 2-6, which is 25%. Ranked games at home versus on the road. Here is where I want to hyperfixate on. At home in his career, Lane Kiffin as an SEC coach is 7-3 against ranked opponents. On the road, he is 2-8 against ranked opponents. So when I look at that now, I'm looking at the Ole Miss game and I'm looking at the Tennessee game and maybe even potentially the Auburn game, depending on how they end up panning out this season, and my antenna is up. And I'm waving my red flag and saying, hold on now, because he's never really done this and gone on the road and won a big SEC game. So I think that is part of my evaluation. I feel vastly more confident in his ability to win those big games at home, Sam, than they do on the road based off of his track record. Fair?
I mean, if you're projecting an LSU season based off of that stat, that benefits them.
It does, because they get their bigger games at home.
Ole Miss will be ranked. Week three, more than likely. It would be stunning if they weren't. They would have to lose both of their first two games, and one of them is Charlotte, not to. That's not even a traditional road game. That's a whole different thing. That shouldn't even be in the stat. Texas A&M's at home. They're going to be ranked. Auburn, if they're ranked, is on the road, but I don't think Auburn can't talk on a Wednesday. Is it Wednesday? Wednesday morning will be ranked. Alabama's going to likely be ranked, but that's at home. Texas is at home. Tennessee's on the road. They might be ranked, but it's probably in the 20s because that's usually where they are. It's not an unfavorable schedule from that perspective. They get cracks at home. That crowd this year is going to be psychotically loud. You're going to see it week one. It is going to be loud. The band's going to be loud. That is a crowd fiending for some sort of playoff-level success after what Brian Kelly did the last couple of years. I think they hit the over on that 8.5. I think they get to 9. I think they get to 9 or 10 and they find a way into the playoff. That's where I'm at with it. I think Sam Levitt's going to swing back the other way. In year 3 at Auburn, and I brought up Bo Nix as a comparison, Bo Nix played 10 games. He was up and down. He got hurt at one point in that year. And then year 4, he exploded at Oregon. The minute he got to Oregon, he exploded. I think Levitt's going to do it a year in advance, Faxon. I think he's going to explode with Kiffin. And I think he's going to get back to what he was as a freshman,
which was
an extremely gifted passer who could get out of the pocket with bad decision-making tendencies. And I think Kiffin's going to coach some of that out of him.
When is Lane Kiffin quarterback not produced?
They don't. They like, always produce.
Lane Kiffin quarterbacks, it's one read and go.
He turned Jackson Dart into a first-round pick.
That benefits Sam Levitt. Like, Kiffin's chaos, and it's curated chaos, benefits Levitt's play style.
It takes the bad decision-making risk that we saw last year and the year before, I think, at Arizona State, where a lot of it was him trying to do too much. It takes a lot of that out of it, and it simplifies things for him. You're exactly right.
So I've got a question for you about Kiffin. 654 Roar is the number if you'd like to check in. There are some opponents that he has just spat, like absolutely smacked throughout the course of his SEC career, and there are still some opponents that he has not beat as an SEC head coach. So I want to walk out some opponent history for Lane Kiffin, and then opponent history against teams that they play this year. 654 Roar if you want to get it. He's never played Clemson. He's never played La Tech. Against Ole Miss, he's 0-1, and it was in Oxford. That was in Tennessee in 2009. That just kind of is what it is. The one I really want to hone in on, Sam, did you know that Lane Kiffin is 0-5 against Alabama and has never
Absolutely.
Beat Alabama?
Yeah, no, it's a thing.
That is a thing for him. With that being said, he has put Vanderbilt, Mississippi State, and South Carolina, and Texas A&M, and really Kentucky, outside of one game, even though Kentucky always plays them close, in a noogie. Like, it has been a full-blown little broing of those teams. So, the Alabama thing is a very real thing. I have extreme trepidation with backing Lane Kiffin to beat Alabama. He has also had a very poor track record against Florida and Auburn. He is 1-3 against Florida, and he is 2-3 against Auburn. But against South Carolina, against Mississippi State, against Vanderbilt, and against Texas A&M, he has one combined loss against those schools in his career as an SEC head coach. So there is a stark contrast with opponents and maybe his success against those opponents throughout the course of his career. How much do you value that in building out a projection for this season against those type of opponents that he has a history against?
I don't value it too much because of how different those opponents looked when he played them to what they're going to look like now.
New coach at Auburn specifically.
Well, Kiffin will have an advantage talent-wise over every single team he faces this year, except none. He'll have an advantage talent-wise over every single one of these teams.
Which you think
one
they're more... Texas. Texas is better than one. Texas is better than LSU.
Texas is the only one.
I think Texas A&M, Bama, and Ole Miss are all on that level with them. I don't think that you
think
can say that's
I think they're more talented or equally talented to everybody else on their schedule other than Texas, and that's not something that has been the case in prior years for him other than last year to me. At Ole Miss, at least.
Yeah, I mean, they crapped out 2 years ago, dude, and they were a lot better than everyone they lost. They lost
Absolutely.
To Florida and Kentucky.
I don't think, and that's, if they can avoid silly stuff like that, I'm not necessarily worried about it. I think it will come together as the year goes on. My question for LSU, though, and where my concern is with this team, and it's not even a concern, it's just it's a new coach, it's a new roster, there is no time for it to come together. It has to come together by week 3 at the absolute latest. It needs to come together realistically by week 1 because Clemson is a good team. They may not be championship quality, but they're good. You're going to have to play a legitimate real team week 1, and then you're going to get 1 week of freedom, and you have to be 100% locked in for week 3 and 4 against two teams that were in the playoff last year and could very well be back this year.
That's going to be a top 5 Ole Miss team at that point in time, and that's going to be a top 10. If they beat Louisville, there's going to be other teams that lose because of the upper echelon matchups. That's going to be Hornets Nest followed by like number 7 Texas A&M at home.
My point, I'm not overly worried about the matchup history in the past. I'm not worried about the Kentucky game from a couple years ago or the Florida game from a couple years ago. I'm not going to fixate on that because he's in a new environment with new players at an entirely new school. I am a little bit concerned for him and for LSU about the fact that if it doesn't come together week one, they have very little time to get it together. I think it'll be all locked in by week six or seven. But they don't really have the freedom to go out there and lay a stinker or a half-effort game against an Ole Miss or Texas A&M. It's got to be ready quick or else they're going to drop a game or two in the first 4 weeks.
I'm telling you right now, everybody wants to doom and gloom Clemson's first five games. There is a non-zero and very realistic chance that LSU football is 1-3 in the first four games of the Lane Kiffin era.
I just don't, that I is, don't see it.
That is a non, there's a non-zero
it's not
possibility.
It's impossible because of the schedule, but I don't see it. I think they're too. There are a million new transfers on that team, but I think they are too talented to lose all three of those games.
I'm interested to see what happens. We'll walk this out a little bit more on the other side. I think I'm going to have LSU at either 8-4 or 7-5 this year. I just don't think it's going to click. And I think three of your first four games being big-time games is not benefiting your team. Then you have the Alabama thing, and I think they lose back-to-back Bama and Texas at home. I don't think this is the year. And I don't know if Levitt's the quarterback that's going to lead them to the playoff, and I could end up being wrong. That's the beauty of this. Quick break here on the program. We'll walk out some more LSU and talk some more SEC football right after this.
Speed on the bases, power at the plate, Gold Glove defense across the diamond. The Stars of Atlanta are ready to take the field.
Michael Harris going to sprint back, and he somehow makes the catch Willie Mays style and goes into the wall.
For every pitch from March to October,
we are your home for Atlanta Braves baseball.
Right here on The Roar.
The Upstate Sports Authority, 105.5 and 97.5.
The Roar,
where every day is game day.
Sizzling scores all summer long.
And he makes the catch!
The Roar.
From the information I pieced together, I think it's number three or number four nationally as far as spend goes. And that's not even accounting, Sam, for the fact that they are paying a mass buyout fee to Brian Kelly until the end of the earth. They spent tons of money to buy Kiffin out, to bring him in and give him a fat check, then bring all his boys with him, and all the compensation that they spent on this new staff, and they are footing the bill for a top five at minimum roster now in college football. So when framed like that, is this not as simple as playoff or bust in year one for Lane Kiffin and Baton Rouge? What's the level of leash here considering the mass investment that has been made not only to Kiffin and his staff, but the roster and the buyout money that was paid to Brian Kelly as a byproduct of bringing him in?
Well, the expectation if you're an LSU fan should be playoff. Kiffin has demonstrated now that he can get a team there. And he has demonstrated by proxy with his roster last year that he can build a roster that can win multiple playoff games and win an. I think that team was talented enough last year to win a national championship with the field where it was. They were competitive all the way through. I would say the expectation would then be not national championship, but playoff bid. But you bring up the roster spend, and it's an interesting point because, yeah, it's a bazillion-dollar roster, and it's probably top five in the country. Is it a top five roster in the country from a pure talent standpoint, or is it simply a top five roster in the country from a spend standpoint because they had no choice but to make it such? Because they're not retaining a ton of talent. They're not bringing guys back year over year. They're not able to economically, air quotes, build this roster the same way. Name any SEC. Kalen DeBoer can retain year over year. LSU struggled a little bit comparatively, I would imagine, to retain because they had a new coach coming in. They really didn't have a choice but to spend a bajillion dollars, and they chose to do that, and now they have a roster that I feel is probably back half of the top 10 quality. Is that good enough year one? Does that get you more than 9-3 in a playoff berth? Is a very different question, but to roundabout back to it, yeah, facts, and I think absolutely the expectation needs to be playoff year one. It may not be top three team in the country expectation, but 10-2 and competitive nationally and competitive for an SEC championship, it feels like it has to be, or else what's the difference between what they've done now and what Kelly was doing, where you figure 8-9 wins?
Yeah. Texter gets in and says Lane has his offenses ready to go early. I agree and I disagree, and let me map out why. So I've got some data for you. Six seasons at Ole Miss. First SEC game for Lane Kiffin. 2-4 record, 22.5 PPG. Doesn't sound great. It doesn't sound great. Now, in comparison, in his first non-con P4 game at Ole Miss, which was four out of the six seasons he coached, 4-0 record, 43 PPG, 600 yards a game, 8 YPP, which is yards per play. So, I don't know. There's multiple things to break down here with Lane Kiffin's early track record and success, and also like level of competition, right? You play Louisville on a neutral in 21. You're at Georgia Tech in 22 and win 42-0. You play that game against Wake Forest, which they bought themselves out of the second one. Then you play Georgia Tech again. So I'm kind of conflicted with how to evaluate that, Sam. When you hear Lane Kiffin's success record or track record or lack thereof in early games against SEC opponents, does that give you trepidation with backing them early in this campaign? Or again, is this one of those things where it's a new roster, a new location, so you don't matter a ton? Because here's what I also have. Lane Kiffin, 7 years as an SEC head coach, game one of the SEC campaign, 2-5 record, 21 points per game. Game two, 6-1 record, 41 points per game. If there's a direct correlation there, I'm not sure. I'm just giving you the numbers and presenting the data, and you can inherit that how you want to inherit that.
For me, past failure and past success does not beget future failure, future success, especially in a new location, so I'm not going to take it with too much. The most important room in this building is the offensive line room. Remember last year when we were talking about LSU and we were talking about what it would look like? The question that we all had as Clemson fans going into that week one game was, could LSU run the football? Could LSU keep Nussmeier upright? Was the offensive line with a ton of new starters going to be consistently good? The answer was no. It was not last year.
Yeah.
It killed Nussmeier repeatedly, and Nussmeier did it to himself as well. But Nussmeier was not able to stay upright, got hurt, and stunk, and killed his draft stock because of it. Their offensive line was bad overall. If it's a lot better this year, which it should be, they paid a ton of money to make it better, that opens up Harlan Berry. That opens up Caden Durham. That opens up Sam Levitt as an escape artist in the pocket, where if it holds up just long enough to where he can go through his reads, if that first one in that Kiffin offense isn't there, and get to the second and third, and then if that's not there, bail out of the pocket. If he has time to do all of that, which he did in year one in the Big 12 at Arizona State, he's going to be really, really good. I am still a little skeptical that that all comes together immediately, though. I know Jordan Seaton's fantastic. I don't know a ton about the rest of the guys on the offensive line outside of the returning starters who were up and down last year. So that's where I am interested to see how it looks for LSU immediately. And I think a good thing for them is that they get Clemson week one, and they get an opportunity to face Will Helt and a bunch of guys who we are pretty high on here that can get to the quarterback and would provide some pressure and pushback in the run game. They're going to have challenges out the gate. And for that, I think that benefits them. And then they get the week off essentially after with La Tech. If the offensive line is good, Sam Levitt will be fantastic, I think, and closer to what he was as a redshirt freshman. And they will be very, very tough to beat this year. That gets them to 9 or 10 wins probably in a playoff bid at the back half. I would say that's a success for LSU.
I think you're a lot higher on LSU than I am. I'm interested to hear Bengal John's perspective. But I do want to say before I take John's phone call, I think the college football playoff, you know, national championship ascension for Lane Kiffin at LSU is a matter of when, not if. I want to preface that. I think Lane Kiffin's a really good coach. I think that this move is going to work for LSU. I think this is a really good personality fit. I'm just not sure it's going to be this year.
I don't think it's this year, but I think they can get to 9 or 10 and be competitive in the playoff discussion.
I'm viewing this as more of like a foundational, let's lay the groundwork, and then next year or in year three is where you see the rocket ship ascension. And listen, that was kind of the way it was at Ole Miss, right? And it took them until year six to get to that stage. The resources, the finances, the stadium, the fans, everything is just better at LSU. Like, they're using just different for a reason, right? That's the motto. It is just different at LSU in comparison to Ole Miss. That is a big bro, little bro type of thing. And let's take Bengal John's phone call on that note on our Pratt Injury Lawyers phone line, 654-ROAR. John, I hope you're as excited as we are for what's going down in 45 days. I'm chomping at the bit to snap the football, man.
Dude, I can't tell you how excited I am. And thank you guys for taking my call, both of you. And I'm going to tell you something. You've covered a lot of topics in the last 10 minutes. The first thing that I want to say, and you probably already know this, LSU is favored in every game but two.
Yes.
The first one is the Ole Miss game, and they're an underdog by, I believe, 2.5, maybe it's 3. But basically, that's home field advantage. That's where that comes from. They're also an underdog against Texas by 3.5, and that's not much of a margin either, and I think it would probably be worse if that game were going to be played in Texas. But since it's played in Baton Rouge, I think that's got some home field advantage sprinkled in there too. I truly believe, guys, first and foremost, that the offensive line is substantially better than it was last year. And I truly believe that if Sam Leavitt is healthy off of the Lisfranc injury, and he is what he was at Arizona State his freshman year, you're looking at a quarterback that can throw for almost 4,000 yards and he can make plays with his feet. The question is he fully healthy? And by my sources in Baton Rouge, they say he is. They say he's ready for fall camp 100%.
That's great
news.
They
say he's making all of the moves. They say he's making the adjustments. He's made some good reads in spring ball, although he was not a full go in spring ball. But the other thing that you've got to realize is that this guy, when he came to LSU, there was a year, as you well know, that was kind of questionable, right? I mean, he started out fairly decent, and then all of a sudden – it kind of went awry second half of the season. So there is a question mark there, but if he is what he was, then I think LSU is going to be fine, and I know the offensive line is going to be substantially better. I really don't have any questions on the defense. Blake Baker was 29th in the country last year with the defense, and I think that's going to do nothing but get better. And then, obviously the pieces they added. Then the third point that you mentioned was – roster and money spent and how much they're doing. Guys, there's no question. We're well over the $100 million mark. But I will tell you, on August the 5th and August the 7th, August the 5th through the 7th, there are going to be 40 major donors in Baton Rouge at the Capitol that there's a meeting of how they're going to continue to fund this program. And I'm super excited about it. I know of many of them. I don't know all of them. And I know that you know a lot of people down there too, Faxon.
Yep.
I'm telling you, they're finding a way to continue this money stream.
The money's
there.
There
is no doubt.
The money's there. And listen, they wouldn't have been able to get Kelly out and Kiffin in and make the massive moves that they made with men's basketball with reinforced, you know, investment there if the well was dry. The well is not dry, and this is a massive alumni and donor base at a big-time state flagship type of school in LSU. So that's really just kind of where I'm at, John. I don't think the well's going dry anytime soon. I'm just interested to see the extremes that this goes to, because you use the $100 million-plus mark, and that's reality. Like, I wasn't using it as a diss as much as there's a lot of pressure on Lane, inherently speaking, because of the investment. But he's up for the challenge, and he wouldn't have taken the job if he didn't feel like he could make the most out of it. And it's got to be an exciting opportunity for him to have the most talented and expensive roster of his career, with also some increased expectations for the first time in his career, where it's like, you've got a fan base of people that's viewing you as the guy to take you to the promised land, and they want to see this ascension of their program, and they're tasking you as the guy to do it. That's a lot of pressure, and we're going to see if Lane's built for it pretty quick in those first four games.
It is, and I know you guys are up against it. My final comment is this, Faxon, and I'll take it off the air and listen to on the other side, but to be quite honest with you, I think there is some of that icing on the cake that says win or bust, make the playoff the first year. But I think reality, too. I think at worst, this team is 9-3. I think at best, this team is 11-1. You get past Ole Miss, you get through September unscathed, and you get past Ole Miss, you do get a little bit of a break in October. And then, obviously, the meat comes in November. But Alabama's not the same Alabama as they used to be. We all know that.
Nope.
This could be 11-1 team. I see them more like a 10-2. I think they're going to have a slip up. They're not going to have a problem with Arkansas or Tennessee, I don't think. I mean, so you look at the overall schedule. I think if he goes 10-2, I think that's a success. And I'll take that off the air. Thanks, guys.
Yeah, appreciate you checking in. Bagel John, 654 Roar is the number. And obviously, we trust John with all of his different connections in Baton Rouge and such. anything to add on that before we take a break, Sam? I mean, I think it's evident that there has been a mass amount of money, more than either of us will ever touch in our lives, poured into this thing in Baton Rouge. Inherently, that breeds pressure. It's a tough schedule, but it's a good enough roster to go out there and win a ton of football games if Lane's up for the task.
I think the floor is lower than John has it, with the reality baked in that Leavitt could be what he was last year again. And he could...
And he, like, a Liz Frank injury isn't anything to scoff. Like, that's one of the most serious injuries in sports. It is.
Even when healthy, Leavitt is extremely topsy-turvy, and mostly in a good way, which is, again, why I like him a lot. And I liked him a lot going last year, and I was bummed out that he didn't exceed the expectations or match the expectations that were placed upon him after a playoff run. That reality does exist where he's not freshman Leavitt. But for LSU, let's say Sam Leavitt stinks. Let's just play the game. Let's say Sam Leavitt comes out and has a rough first 4 weeks of the year, and LSU is, let's say, 2-2 coming out of the Clemson, La Tech, Ole Miss, Texas A&M situation, and it's just not him. They're not going to bench Sam Leavitt, but they do have a five-star sitting behind him in Houston Longstreet, who is one of the highest touted recruits in the country. They're not scraping the bottom of the barrel for options if the offense needs a spark. So that lowers their floor a little bit for me to 8 wins, maybe 7 wins. I could see 7 in a disaster case with the schedule. But I'm closer to where John is, where I think they get to 9 or 10 and are competitive all year long in the playoff. I'm not as worried about the back half of the schedule as maybe you are. I think they'll beat Alabama and Tennessee. Texas will be very difficult. But after that Texas A&M game, there's only one game on there that I think they will lose.
Yeah, there's a lot to like about this roster. There's a lot to like about the team. I think if your calling card is Seton and the big boys up front you brought in the portal, and you have a good run game to complement Leavitt in a passing
the
game.
Your offensive line has to be better.
Your O-line has to be really good, and I think on paper they are. All right, quick break coming up here on the program. Folks, before we take one, Crawl Space Medic of the Upstate is where you need to go for all of your needs here in the Upstate of South Carolina. If the dishes in your china cabinet rattle when you walk through your dining room, your floors feel soft, bouncy, or uneven, the real problem may not be your floors. It could be what's underneath them. Elevated moisture levels, standing water in your crawl space. These things are important, and they can quietly damage your home's foundation, create costly repairs down the road, and they can impact your physical health. Call Crawl Space Medic today. Mention code RADIO for a free inspection. That's code RADIO for a free inspection, and you can get honest answers and long-lasting repairs from a team of fellow Tigers. There's no gimmicks, there's no pressure, and there's no upselling at Crawl Space Medic. Go with a trusted local organization, Crawl Space Medic. And again, that's code RADIO for a free inspection. Quick break here on the program with more coming up right after this on The Roar.
With The Roar app,
whenever your Clemson Tigers are playing,
touchdown! The game is streaming live from anywhere in the world.
Your Tigers.
Your Tigers. Your flagship station.
Your app. Download it today.
Get more. I think Trinidad is going to run rampant.
I do think that.
Man.
You don't think Baker's defense
Clemson
is...
Clemson fans can just be mad at me, and I'll just say this right now. For that week and that week only, Pete Golden's the freaking man. He's the man for that week. And I'm putting on my rebel cap, and I'm rooting for Ole Miss. I can't see how you're rooting for Lane Kiffin in that scenario. He quit on his team before the playoff and took a rival job. I can't root for that guy. I can't do it. I cannot root for that guy. I get what Golden did to Clemson. I'm still pissed about it because that kid would have been a really good player here. For that week and that week only, we stand with Pete Golden on this program, and I'm rooting for the Rebs.
I love my alma mater. We play at noon that day. My eyes are on 7:30. I'm not gonna lie to you. I am just as excited for
that. What do we have? North Carolina. Yeah. Let's get a good win, please.
In Death Valley and get up there.
I knew this text was coming, Fax, and you just made me puke. I get it.
I'm rooting for a meteor.
I love the meteor clause. That was a Fax and favorite growing up in our household in rivalry games. You just root for a meteor to hit the stadium. I understand. Listen, I despise Pete Golding too. If there's anything I semi-respect about Pete Golding is the way that he raked Lane over the coals and the pressers in every single possible moment after his departure. And then I also do think the fact that Trinidad stood 10 toes down in Oxford and didn't jump ship to Ole Miss, or didn't jump ship to LSU from Ole Miss, I'd love Trinidad Chambliss. For me, Trindade Chambliss is one of my favorite players. And
I wish
Sam
he
knows that's
left
the case.
Ole Miss.
No,
I respect that he was that he stuck around through all the legal crap. But
I'm rooting for the team. I'm rooting for the coach that did not turn his back on his team before the biggest game of their season. That is my logic. It is not related to Clemson. I will not root for Ole Miss in another game they play unless South Carolina is on the schedule, and that is just my opinion. I'm not rooting for Lane going into the Hornets' nest at the place he left after he has just completely diminished everything he's done there with his behavior this offseason.
See, now, I don't have a rooting interest in this game, but I think it would be real funny if Lane went in there and whooped him. Like, if Lane walked into that building, looked Pete Golding in the eye, and looked his old team in the eye and said, "This is why I left. Y'all aren't built for me." And he got out of there. That'd be fun. You can't tell me that wouldn't be funny. It would validate him in some ways.
I hate the Trindade Chambliss pulls for Ole Miss or plays for Ole Miss. I just hate it.
Dexter said facts and you quit on your men's
That's
league
true,
team
man.
Before the playoffs.
That's true, man. I'm no better than Lane. I'm not That's the coach true. Though. And I'm also That's not true. Being compensated. If I was being paid $6 million to play men's league, you bet your tail I'd be there next Tuesday. That's a little bit different of a scenario.
I cannot wait for that game as a neutral. I'm just going to sit back, kick my feet up, and enjoy the crap.
You know
crap
what I'm saying?
That it is.
Trinidad, throw another dime. Oxford's feeling great on Island Time, Sam.
There's no outcome. We've talked about great hate watches. There's no outcome that isn't awesome there.
Yeah, honestly,
it's an
that's a win-win.
Hate watch.
That's a win-win.
It's like watching a, I don't even know. For you, it's probably like watching a Cowboys-Giants game. It is an all-time great hate watch.
Somebody said North Korea versus China. Yeah, that would be a similar parallel at this point. There's nobody that's a winner.
It gets a lot more interesting if someone's coming into that game with a loss, too.
But you know what you're doing? You're watching. And everybody's watching. Everybody is watching. Texter says we need a drinking game for that game. I'm not sure. I'm not 100% sure. I don't even know. Texter says, we need the address for your next men's league game. We need to see the drama unfold. That's a hard pass. Texter says, facts and go to break. Pulling for Ole Miss is not a good look. Pulling is probably a little bit too strong. They do have one of my favorite players in college football. And for what it's worth, I like know multiple members of Ole Miss's coaching staff. So I know one of their positional coaches very well.
There will be no pulling on my end.
You remember Zach Johansson, Sam?
Couldn't tell you.
Ole Miss coaching staff that we went to high school with. Played at Ole Miss for Pete Golding and Lane Kiffin the last 4 years. He's on the coaching staff now.
I have no idea who that is. I confidently say that, but I'm sure you do. I won't be rooting for anybody in this game. I will be rooting for things to be thrown on the field and just see what happens.
Texter says, always hated Lane, but hated towards Golding higher. He is the rebounder, the reason our linebacker room is depleted. No, I get that. Yeah, I understand. And listen, pulling is probably a little bit too strong, but I'm not rooting for Lane Kiffin in that game. I'm not. Maybe I'll be in the meteor camp, and maybe that's just where we need to go. Let's get to Noah on our Pratt Injury Lawyers phone line. 654-ROAR is the number. Noah, sorry for making you wait so long. We got sidetracked with Golding and Kiffin and all that, but I know you want to talk some NFL.
Good. No, you're good. I'll just say this before I get to my NFL. Twitter will be a lot more fun Saturday night if LSU does win, because Kiffin will be talking his talk if they win. So I think Twitter will be more fun if LSU wins.
Honestly, I can't even – that game is just going to be awesome. Like, that's really what my main takeaway is there's no outcome that's not hilarious there, right, Noah? Like, regardless of who wins,
yeah.
Somebody's got the egg on their face.
I mean, yeah. Well, Twitter's going to be good the whole week leading up to the game, first off, because you're going to have Lane posting his funny videos, his TikToks, talking his noise, and then the outcome is the outcome. So, and then whatever happened is a win for everyone, because it's going to be entertaining, to say the least. And then my NFL questions, though, facts were, Panthers starting tackle got hurt out for the season. How bad does that hurt them? They got anybody ready to go, you think?
Yeah, unfortunately, there's a just mass world conspiracy against Bryce Young playing with a healthy offensive line. I don't know what it is. We're wishing Morton the best on his recovery and what appears to be a really tragic situation there. The backup plan is not good, Noah. It's not good. And this is severely impeding Carolina's ability to be a dynamic rushing attack and have a really good pass protector for Bryce Young on that right side. So I think it's really bad news for Carolina in the short and the long term. And I wonder what Bryce Young did to the football gods every day, because it feels like that guy just can't catch a break for the life of him.
Okay, and then obviously, I feel like everyone saw the news about our college scout director and the betting for Arizona, right? That came out last week.
Yeah, are you talking about the old gambling scandal?
Yes.
Yeah, we didn't cover it on the program.
The reason I bring that up is for this point. Did you see what just happened to our starting guard?
No.
Isaiah Adams.
No, did he get popped in this gambling stuff too?
Not in gambling. He just got arrested in a four-man. He's from Canada, so he's on a work visa in America, first off. He got caught with three others. He just had to turn himself in from gang-related task force for gun possession charges.
Yeah.
Dude got caught funneling, I think you can look it up. It's either 2 or 4 kilos of fentanyl.
Dude, what?
Yeah, not Isaiah Adams. One of the four men had 4 kilos of fentanyl, got caught. Him and a girl got taken in. They raid a person's house. Another female gets taken in.
Oh, my gosh. No, Adams, you're right. This is breaking on the NY Post 40 minutes ago. You're 100% right. Yep. This is unbelievable.
So, that's my week and a half as a fan comes up on top of I got Brissett holding in. What are we doing? Down in the desert, Zach.
What? Noah, what is the Cardinals slogan? Like, what's your equivalent to rise up for the Falcons? Do y'all have one?
Well, unfortunately, it would also be rise up Red Sea. So
rise up Red Sea. Let's go.
Noah.
Well, bird gang, but like, unfortunately, like it's just been tough. So Chase Basantis, he got drafted out of A&M. He's projected to get a lot of playing time. He wasn't projected to be the starter going into training camp. Congratulations, son, you've just been named a starter.
He's gonna play now.
We don't know that this boy's even gonna be eligible to play football.
He's going to play now.
This is unbelievable stuff, Noah. We got about 30 more seconds before a break for you, but brother.
Yeah. I just wanted to touch that into your ear and get your reaction. I'll let you get the break, and I'm interested to hear what y'all got to say off the break. Appreciate you as always. Y'all have a great week.
Thank you so much for calling in, Noah.
Noah's got it. Cardinals fans have it rough.
Rise up, Red Sea.
My starting guard's getting arrested, and Jacoby Brissett's holding in. He is still holding in. You're right.
If I'm ever in a position where Jacoby Brissett's got the gun to my org's head, that just can't possibly be a fun position to be in.
Oh, Noah. Carson Beck is your starting quarterback.
Goodness gracious. All right, we'll take a break here on the program. Final hour of the program coming up right after this. We'll talk a little NFL football with all this recent chaos on the Roar.
WCCP-FM 105.5 Clemson. Greenville Anderson. WAHD-AM 1560. Cowpens. 97.5 Spartanburg. We are the Roar.
Got a busy...